much each year, replace fossil-fueled electrical plants with fusion, build solar power satellites, make solar cells cheap enough so private homeowners can afford to cover the roofs with them, replace fossil-fueled cars with electric or hydrogen fuels. He paused to take a breath. Malik mused. Greenwell of Detroit wants to produce hydrogen cars. Let him. Let a thousand flowers blossom, as an old communist once said. As long as they're cutting down on fossil fuel burning, let them work out the problem in their own way. It would be chaos, Malik said. Dan shook his head. It'll take a hell of a lot of coordination from the GEC. Coordination, not control. But it can be done.
Do you think so? Jane asked.
Yes. In 10 years? Asked Kate. What choice do we have? Dan countered. If we do nothing, half the world will look like New Orleans. If we try to force everybody into some master plan imposed by the GEC, it won't work, and bastards like Gaetano will be just itching to take it over for themselves. Let the people work out their own solutions, coordinated by the GEC. That's the way to win the battle. Malik remembered something. That old man that Gaetano took us to see, he's still there, you know. Neither Interpol nor the Italian authorities have any evidence that he's ever been involved in any crime. The rats are always hiding behind the walls, Vasily. That's part of human nature. You've always got to be on the lookout for them. But the more you centralize control, the easier you make it for them to bend everything to their own uses. Yes, Malik admitted. You're right. You've been right all along, I suppose.
Then we can return Astro to Dan, said Jane.
Malik nodded.
You've all forgotten one thing, Jane said.
When they turned to her, she went on.
You might be able to change over all the world's electrical power generation to solar and nuclear. You might even be able to replace all the transportation vehicles on Earth with ones that use electrical or hydrogen fuels. But what about the factories? What about manufacturing and metal smelting and all the heavy industries? They burn coal and oil and natural gas. How can you convert them to nuclear electricity?
The others looked at each other. Then they all saw that Dan was grinning like a school kid who knew the answer.
Well, said Jane,
you remember that asteroid we corralled 10 years ago? We never even started to use its mineral resources, but it's still up there in a high Earth orbit.
So?
We estimated it contained roughly 4 million tons of high-grade iron ore, plus a few thousand tons of impurities like platinum and gold. And that was just a teeny asteroid, hardly bigger than a football field. Malik groaned. What you would do to the world market for precious metals by dumping a few thousand tons of gold? Screw the precious metals, Dan snapped. There are thousands of asteroids out there, millions of them. Some of them are miles wide. Enough metals and minerals to supply the whole world for 1 billion years. And we can smelt them in space as well. Use sunlight for energy. Focused sunlight for heat.
The capital costs would be tremendous, Malik pointed out.
Dan grinned again. Well, if I can have Astro back in my hands again, I'll raise the capital. Don't worry about that. Kate said, I don't see how you or anybody else could replace the world's metals industry in 10 years. We can't, Scarlet, but we can get started. We can go as hard and as fast as we possibly can. We'll have to get the leaders in the industry to go into this with us. We want cooperation, not competition. You'll have to sweet-talk a lot of those old farts on their boards of directors.
Me?
Kate asked. Sure, you. Who else? I'm going to be too busy with the asteroid project to hold hands back here on Earth. You're going to be Astro's CEO. She gasped.
You'd trust me?
Dan laughed. Your sister's fallen in love with Big George, hasn't she? That makes you practically a member of the family.
You'd trust me,
Kate said again in a whisper. Dan turned his wheelchair to face Jane. And what about you, lady? Are you ready to step down from your lofty position in the GEC and marry a guy who's going to be spending most of his time in space? Jane raised a brow.
Such a romantic proposal, Dan. I'm swept off my feet.
Good, then that's settled.
Now, wait a minute.
But he had already swung back toward Malik's bed. Vasily, get well quickly.
We're going to need you at the head of the GEC, and we'll do everything we can to support you.
I never thought I'd hear such words from you, Mr. Capitalist.
Strange times make strange alliances, said Dan. We've got 10 years to save the world.
Do you think we can?
Dan shrugged. We'd better. If we can't, then who the hell can? That evening, Dan and Jane had dinner together on the terrace outside his hospital room. The moon smiled lopsidedly down at them. The Mediterranean glittered in its silver radiance. Dan was still in his hospital whites. Jane had changed to a peach-toned knit dress with a scalloped neckline. I'm serious, Dan said as he poured the wine. I love you, Jane. I want to marry you.
But you're going to be dashing off to the moon again, she said.
A lot farther than that, dear. The main asteroid belt is out beyond the orbit of Mars.
You'll be gone for years at a time.
I'd like you to come with me. The accommodations won't be plush, but we'll be together. Make a terrific honeymoon.
And what will I do out there? She asked, her voice low, trembling. I'm not an engineer or an astronaut.
You could be with me, Dan replied uneasily. You could learn to help. You could start a new life. She leaned across the little table and put her hand atop his.
Dan, I'm a politician. I'm very good at it. I can get people to work together. I've even gotten you and Vasily to work together, haven't I?
You? She smiled.
I'll take the credit for it. That's what politicians do.
Okay by me, he said. Her smile turned sad.
There won't be anything for me to do on your wonderful space missions, Dan. But there's an awful lot I can accomplish here.
I don't want to be apart from you ever again.
Me neither. But I'm needed here, Dan. Don't you see that? I can help. I can keep Vasily on track and help to keep things running smoothly here. But I want you. Would you give up your asteroid project to be with me? Would you turn away from what you do best for my sake?
Dan looked away from her, out to the gleaming sea and up at the moon. It seemed to be laughing at him now. You won't marry me, he said at last.
I won't go out on your space mission, where I'll only be in the way, Jane said. And you won't stay here on Earth when you've got so much to accomplish out there, will you?
He saw that there were tears in her eyes, and he realized that his own eyes were misting over. You mean it'll never work out for us, he said, the words almost choking in his throat.
You described it best when you said that what we're facing is a war. We are at war. Against an impending disaster. You make sacrifices when you're fighting a war.
A million thoughts ran through Dan's mind, but he could not find a single word to say.
Dan, I'm sorry.
Me too.
Maybe when all this is over. Maybe then.
He looked into her eyes and saw his own pain mirrored. Maybe then, he whispered. Jane pulled her hand away and straightened up in her chair. Trying to sound more cheerful, she asked,
Do you think we'll really beat this greenhouse cliff?
He shrugged.
In just 10 years?
Dan pushed away from the table and got to his feet.
I don't know.
Nobody knows. All we can do is try. And he walked into his hospital room, went to the closet, and began to pull out his working clothes. This concludes the reading of Empire Builders by Ben Bova. Copyright 1993 by Ben Bova. This book was read by Stefan Rudnicki and directed by Judy Young. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with the Barbara Bova Literary Agency and was produced in 2010 by Blackstone Audio Inc., which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audio, Inc. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.